A major contraction in North Korea's economy. Are sanctions beginning to bite? This is the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. North Korea's economy shrank at its sharpest rate in 20 years last year, according to estimates from South Korea's central bank. So is economic pressure making Pyongyang think twice about its nuclear program? John Nilsson Wright is a Korean expert at Chatham House and Cambridge University.
Well, the first thing we need to be careful about is overestimating these statistics. Any statistical knowledge about North Korea needs to be taken with an extremely large pinch of salt. But if it's true that the North Korean economy has contracted as sharply as it appears to have done, well then, yes, I think it's fair to say that sanctions almost certainly are having some impact. The question is, how much and who's feeling it the most? We need to recognize that there's a huge difference between economic conditions in Pyongyang, where the elite live, and throughout the rest of the economy. But there's no doubt that Kim Jong-un, of course, would like to see, as part of his two-pronged strategy of military modernization and economic growth, to see as a result of his meetings with the South Korean leader and, of course, with Donald Trump, the opening up of the economy and the beginning of real economic growth for his people.
Now, the U.S. aim is to force him to negotiate meaningfully. At what point does the economic situation become serious enough for him to do that?
Well, it's a question of who blinks first, really, isn't it? I mean, Washington wants Pyongyang to give up its nukes and wants to maintain that economic pressure. China takes a different position. It believes that pressure should be relaxed now and is making that argument. The South Koreans, themselves involved in their own talks with North Korea, supporting that idea of gradual economic relaxation. Pyongyang, I think, hopes that the Americans will be pressured by other countries to take a more accommodating position. And I think that's why they're holding out at this stage.
John Nilsson, let's do the numbers. European stock markets diverged at the start of trading as auto and bank stocks gave up their gains amid rising trade tensions. In India this week, a group of women in the southern state of Kerala have won the right to sit at work. Amrit Dhillon with The Guardian newspaper has been telling me how the case began.
This woman called Sybil Wilson was serving a customer, and having shown lots of saris to the customer was kind of sitting there waiting to decide which sari she would buy. In that time, Sybil happened to lean against the wall. Now, the employer, who was actually out of the country, watched the footage wherever he was and saw that Sybil had been leaning against a wall. And later, her salary was docked by about 100 rupees, which is only about $2. But for an Indian, poor Indian person, that's quite a lot. A lot of the sales assistants in sari shops, mostly women, were not allowed to sit at all during the day. Their toilet breaks were really, really limited. And if they talked, they were punished and they were not allowed to use the elevators.
Wow. I mean, that will remind a lot of people of the film The Help. And, you know, that movie showed how black domestic workers in the U.S. in the 1960s, not that long ago, were dealing with similarly demeaning conditions. So what is the reason behind all this in India?
Well, there are all sorts of reasons. You know, the labor laws are very lax. But really at the root of it all is the attitude in society towards people who are poor. So the social inequality you see is translated into the workplace.
So now these women have won the right in a new law to have better conditions, better pay. How have they reacted?
Well, one woman I spoke to was thrilled because she, until about a week ago, she'd been thinking of leaving the job because she had joint pains in her knees. She was really in bad shape, but she hadn't left because she needs the money to support her two young children who are at school. So now with this decision by the Kerala state government, she's very, very pleased. It means that she can continue working, have a chair to sit on during the day and have the income to educate her children.
Amrit Dhillon in Delhi. David Bowie there singing about the loud and tasteless world of fashion where changing trends make clothes very disposable. Well, now the British fashion label Burberry has admitted burning more than $37 million worth of unwanted wanted products this year. Freelance fashion journalist Karen Kay explains why.
Fashion, by its very nature, is a very fickle business. All it takes is a high-profile celebrity, such as the Duchess of Sussex, for example, to wear one of their coats, and suddenly demand is soaring. But if someone of a less aspirational nature wears the clothes, then that stock is going to lay in the shops unsold. And this is what has happened. They have misdiagnosed their potential sales and ended up with an awful lot of unwanted stock in warehouses. And unfortunately, what they don't want to do is limit their reputation or dilute their brand reputation. So instead of putting it out and selling it at a discounted price, they'd rather burn the clothes.
That's extraordinary. I mean, it comes on top of the revelation a few months ago that Cartier destroyed, well, I mean, they recycled more than $500 million worth of watches. I would have thought fast fashion does not include these high-end luxury items.
I think it does say an awful lot about society. So, yes, it says that we are not willing to buy things that aren't popular. It does say that companies have a massive carbon footprint. They're manufacturing huge volumes of clothes and destroying them within weeks or months of manufacturing. There aren't many millennials who are buying Cartier watches and Burberry raincoats, it must be said. But brands like H&M, for example, they last year burnt 15 tons of clothes at a power station in Sweden, claiming the stock wasn't sellable. They said that incinerator powered a small city for a while. So this is an industry-wide problem, from the affordable fast fashion right up to the designer level.
Fashion journalist Karen Kay. Now, remember, get our podcast wherever you get yours. We'll be back on Monday. I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.